and Judy. Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on our business call today. Today is Saturday, May 12, 2018. And as you know, just for a little disclaimer, we're not accountants, tax specialists, or CPAs. We're not lawyers or legal professionals or investment advisors. We do not sell or promote the purchase of foreign currency. What we do is create business trusts, a method we feel to be superior in asset protection. And I would like to introduce you to my colleague, Judy, today.
Good afternoon, everybody.
So, Judy, I think we have a pretty full room here today, so would you like to get started?
Oh, I would love to, Carol. Happy Saturday to everybody. So, Carol, I'm going to start very, very basic, like you've taught me to do. Why do I need a trust?
Well, you know, Americans with any wealth at all, and let's face it, we're all hoping to be in that position pretty soon, all have at least one financial foe that they fear more than the tax man. That foe, unfortunately, is the lawyer. And many businessmen and professionals know the legal system is out of control, and nowadays it doesn't take much to convince a jury to vote to give all of your assets to a sympathetic plaintiff. And one mistake or even one unfortunate accident can take away all of the fruits of a life's labor. Insurance often cannot or will not cover an entire claim. Juries often award damages beyond the limits of the policy, forcing the creditor to look to your personal assets to satisfy his claim against you or your business. So think about this. Because of the peripheral, I have a hard time saying proliferation of the lawsuit and the potential exposure and liability so many face every day, successful professionals and business owners are putting a higher priority on asset preservation than on tax avoidance. The Common Law Contract Business Trust Organization is one of the key ways to preserve assets from creditors and judgments from lawsuits. And why is this possible? Simply stated, if you don't own the asset, then no one can take it away from you. Prudent estate planning compels you not to own anything. Asset management, not ownership, is the best method available to reduce risk of loss. And you can do this by utilizing the Common Law Contract Business Trust. No insurance at any cost can furnish the protection that the Contract Business Trust can provide. Protection for you, your family, your goals, and objectives. And remember, the secret of real wealth is not ownership, but control. I think it was David Rockefeller that's famous for saying that. And we all know he controlled a great deal.
Exactly. That was a great explanation, Carol. Thank you. So we've all heard or read about trusts in relation to this currency that we all own, all the different foreign currency. We've heard about statutory trust, grantor trust, Wyoming trust, revocable and irrevocable trust. Carol, why is the business trust that you offer so superior to any of those other entities?
Well, let's just talk about those entities themselves for a minute. And there's so much information out there about all these different plans and what you can do and not do.
And exactly.
So let me try to explain a few of them for you. A statutory trust is one which gets its power and privilege from a governing authority, and usually a state government. A grantor trust is one which you grant or give your assets to the trust that is managed by a third party for your benefit. And they can be revocable or irrevocable. A so-called Wyoming trust is a trust that is domiciled in Wyoming, which is a very trust-friendly state. And to my knowledge, there is no Wyoming trust per se.
Okay.
A commonly used and probably pretty familiar statutory grantor trust is a revocable living trust. It is effective at avoiding probate, but not federal or state inheritance taxes. Because it is irrevocable, the IRS may determine that the assets are really yours and include them at the time of your death. An irrevocable trust is one you cannot revoke or amend. It is created in the contemplation of life, not death, like the revocable living trust is.
Okay. So what is a business trust?
The business trust that we provide is really an anomaly in asset protection vehicles. Its full name is Non-Grantor Irrevocable Common Law Contract Business Trust. And you can see why we just refer to it as a trust or business trust.
I see that.
Yeah. Non-grantor means you don't give anything to the trust, but instead you exchange your assets for $21 and 100 trust certificate units. And this is a tax-free exchange. Irrevocable means you can't change your mind and nobody can tell you to revoke it. Common law means it gets its power and right from the law of contracts, which is supported by the U.S. Constitution, which is a common law document itself. That right is protected by Article 1, Section 10, which states that no state shall pass any law impairing the obligations of a contract. A common law contract trust is a contract written in trust format. And business trusts are inherently different than any other type of trust. If you choose to investigate business trusts, you need to start in the B as in boy section of the law library and not in the T as in Tom section.
So business as opposed to trust.
I'm sorry, Judy?
So you're saying you need to look up, start with B for business as opposed to T for trust.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
And a business trust is recognized by the IRS and by the courts as a UBO or unincorporated business organization.
Wow, that's quite a description, Carol. But again, why is it so superior to anything else?
Well, the management of any trust lies with the trustee. With the business trust, you may be your own trustee, which is a big no-no to most statutory trusts. And very simply, that means that there's no one between you and your money. As trustee, you manage the assets you formerly owned as if they were still yours. And the trustee's fiduciary duty is to conserve and improve the trust to increase the value and financial rating of the trust. The trust is not responsible for your personal debts, nor are you liable for any debts of the trust. The trust powers are absolute, exclusive, and unlimited, and are recognized as general powers of natural or artificial persons to do or permit any and all things that are not illegal. This means, then, that they may do absolutely anything that an ordinary adult sovereign person can do. Again, you can be your own trustee, giving you full authority to do or not do anything you want. Then there is no one between you and your money. You can name your spouse as co-trustee. One or both of you can become executive trustees, allowing one to act on behalf of the other. You can name your children as successor trustees to take over when you pass. You can add a bloodline clause to ensure that your family's generational wealth does not fall into others' hands. You can also add a spendthrift clause so no one can hypothecate or pledge his or her possible share of trust income. And you know, that makes it pretty very easy to work with.
A lot of rules
and nobody telling you what to do. You are the one that makes the decisions. Judy?
I'm here, honey. I have not touched the phone. Can you hear me?
Not very well. You're breaking it really badly, so I'll ask the question. So the question I'm sorry, Judy?
What I was saying is, how do I get a business trust? Do I need to contact a lawyer, or can you set one up for me?
Well, I can, but Judy, you're breaking up really, really badly.
All right, I'll call back in.
All right, thanks.
I'll call back in.
All right, thank you. But her question was, how do I get a business trust, and do you need to contract a lawyer to set one up? That is a good question, and no, you do not need to call a lawyer. A business trust that we prepare is an instrument of common law. We have been preparing contract business trusts since 1992. And the next question would be, you know, how did the contract business trust come into being? This is pretty out there for a lot of people, but a lot of people also like history. Smith versus Anderson, Chancery Division 247 in 1880, was a famous court decision that ratified common law trust. And the Smith decision established the validity and viability of these common law contracts and trust format. What's really important is that it should be noted that the Smith decision has never been reversed, nor has its content ever been nullified through the passing of negating statutes in the UK, the US, or any other common law jurisdiction anywhere in the world. So that makes it pretty pretty special. I think Judy's back. Hey, Judy?
Oh, I'm back. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you still breaking up a little bit, but we'll give it a shot, okay?
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, great. So how is the business trust created?
As I mentioned, the business trust is a contract, and one obviously cannot contract with him or herself. So we use a third-party creator to initiate this exchange. At the exchange, a creator temporarily takes title to your assets, in this case your currency, and transfers them to the trust. As part of the exchange, the creator gives you a total of 100 trust certificate units and $21. Now, you notice I said takes title to your assets. Wherever you have your currency stored now, if it's in a desk drawer, if it's under your bed, if it's in a savings, in a vault or a savings deposit box at the bank, it stays there. Either your creator never has to see it, touch it, have anything to do with it, but he just takes the title to it to put it in the trust. And people ask me, how do I get my assets into the trust? Well, that's how. So the creator's next job is to appoint the first trustee. And while he or she can name any suitable adult person, we believe that as you are the one wise enough to buy all that currency, you are most likely candidate to become the first trustee. At that point, the creator exits the contract. The creator can be anyone you choose. Some people may be concerned about any future liability in the trust. Once the creator has performed his or her two tasks, the exchange and appointment of the trustee, he or she is released from all future responsibility, duties, authority, or liability regarding the trust organization. Judy?
Yeah, I'm here, Judy. Can you hear me?
No, you're breaking up really badly. So the question is, I've heard that I can't be the trustee of my own trust. Now you're saying I can. You know, it's one of the most frequent things that we hear and people stumble over. You know, including attorneys and banks. The business trust is not a statutory trust, which we've talked about, and which forbids such a thing, but it is a contract. Determine what you cannot do, look within the four corners of the contract. And it's not a conflict of interest, because once you exchange your assets, you no longer own them. By the terms of the trust, you are eligible to become trustee. We feel that if you were able, again, to put those assets together, you're the most logical choice to be the trustee. Again, there's no one between you and your money. So a lot of people say, well, what do I say when my banker asks me, you know, what's the business endeavor of your trust? Well, first of all, I tell people, do not call it a business trust at the bank because they're going to be expecting state registration, et cetera, et cetera. You do not have to register this trust with any state unless you are actively running a business. Your trust, as far as the banker is concerned, you're doing asset protection or estate planning. And while the best answer is always a truthful one, again, we do not say business trust because you're far better off referring it to it merely as a trust. And let's break for a few Q&A. If anybody has any questions, please star 6. Nobody yet, huh? Okay. Well, we have had a lot of questions lately about certificates. Like, what are they for? What do I do with the two extra trust certificates in my binder? The trust certificate is evidence of the exchange between you and the creator. It conveys absolutely no interest of any kind in the assets of the trust organization, nor the control or selection of the trustees. It does allow you to receive a prorated share of the income or surplus as may be distributed occasionally at the discretion of the trustees. But when a trust certificate holder passes away, his or her trust certificate becomes null and void. That's what the blank certs are for. You do not need to complete them or sign them at this time. It is the responsibility of the remaining or successor trustee to issue a new certificate. So when you get your trust binder from me, you're going to have two certificates of 50 units each made out either both to you or one to you and one to your spouse. The other two stay blank. You don't have to fill them in. You don't have to sign them. You don't do anything. That is going to be up to the successor trustee when you pass away. Oh, let's see. Judy, I miss you. So, yes, we do offer additional trusts, and I suggest them as well. We consider this first trust to be your mother load trust, and we anticipate that you'll want to set up more trust post-RV. We suggest real estate trusts, vehicle trusts, personal property trusts, and charitable trusts. These are all standalone entities which can be funded by the mother-in-law trust. If they require a bank account, they will need a new EIN. Judy, are you there? I don't see you. Well, Judy, you're not there. But we do have a caller. Let's see. Lila, area code 806.
All right. I do have a question, and it is, does this have to be registered with the IRS to get an identification
number? Yeah, you need an EIN number to open a bank account.
All right.
So we use your social to get the EIN number, but that's the only time it's registered unless you are, as I say, actively running a business or you are domiciled in the state of Nevada.
If you do decide to run a business through this, is it better to create a corporation then out of the trust?
You can have a corporation or LLC under the trust, yes.
Okay. Better than doing buying and selling in the trust itself?
Well, you could. I mean, but more people are familiar with LLCs and corporations. My business, Indicator Information, is a trust, and as such, and I'm doing business, and I'm registered with the state of Washington.
Okay. Okay, so the business gets registered with the state, but the trust does not.
Yes, this trust, Indicator Information Institute, is a trust, and it is registered with the state as doing business. I have a business license, the whole nine yards.
Okay, so we take our trust documents and present them to the state to get their license, explain a little bit better.
Well, I think, depending on what state you are in, but here in Washington, all you need to get a business license is you go online and complete the application.
Oh, well, we're...
And then you are registered with the state.
We're in Texas, so...
It's probably that easy. It's just like signing up for an LLC.
All right. If I need something else, I'll get back with you. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Lila. Anybody else? Okay. And Judy is still not with us. Let me see if she showed up somewhere else here. Okay, so again, we're talking about additional trust, and a lot of people do anticipate needing more trust after the RV. Right now, thank you, turnaround time is about a week. Post RV will be considerably longer as well as more expensive, and as far as how long will we be available, I plan to work for about 6 months post-RV for your additional needs. However, I do have a staff that is going to be able to create more trusts as you need them. Okay, looks like another question here. No. Okay. So our business trusts, this is a quick call today, folks. I need somebody to raise their hand. Our business trusts are still just $1,495. Secondary trusts for family members are $1,195, and we do accept all major credit cards. If you refer a fully paid trust client to us, we will send you $300 or credit you the $300 toward another trust. And one of the other things we offer is a triple play. Estate planning is more than just taking care of the money. So we offer a pour over will, which states essentially that anything that you still own in your own name pours over into whatever trust you direct. There's also a durable power of attorney, so if you cannot act for yourself, whether you're ill or you're out of the country, out of town, somebody else can do it for you legally. And we also have a health care directive. And unlike a lot of simple health care directives that you get either at the hospital or at the doctor's office, which gives them the right to take care of you. Ours spells out many different scenarios on what you need, what you want to happen in a particular case. Like if you're in a coma, extraordinary efforts to save you, all that kind of stuff. And it's about 5 pages long. So the cost for a triple play is $275 for a single or $350 for a couple. And right now, again, that's taking a little longer than usual because I have been so busy. But I certainly welcome that. I have staff, and they're not quite up to speed yet on the triple play, but they are working on the trust for me. I see that Judy's back. Let's try another telephone.
I'm so sorry because I've been here the whole time. I think I was muted, but I don't know. But I'm so sorry to disappoint you and everybody else, Carol. I don't know what happened.
Well, no problem. No problem.
I kept saying, Carol, I'm right here.
But does anyone else have any other questions? If not, it's going to be a really short call today. Judy, is there anything you'd like to comment on or ask about?
Well, I was curious about the additional trust. Like, somebody asked me recently if I want to start a business, and I think one of your ladies alluded to it, but somebody said something about that, can the trust own or operate an LLC, and does that create extra liability?
It actually reduces your liability. In an LLC, the member manager still has some responsibility, some liability. If the trust owns, what we recommend, you set up the trust and the LLC underneath the trust, with the trust being the 99% member of the LLC and you being the 1% member of the LLC.
So
your liability, your exposure then is only 1%.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, and you could do the same with the corporation. Have the trust be the major shareholder.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the questions people ask me is, how do I get money out of this trust? You know, it's all well and good it's in there, but how do I get money out? So before I answer that, let's go to Dean, see what he has to say today. Good morning, Dean. Hi, Dean.
Well, hi, Carol. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Well, I've got a couple of questions.
Okay.
They come in, say you're going to purchase some property with your real estate trust. You can negotiate without doing it with the trust, and then when you close, you need to use the trust, right?
Yeah, so when you buy this house, you're going to buy it in your own name and or signs.
Okay.
So when you do go to close, you're going to sign it then to the trust. And the trust
okay, so I can do all the negotiations in my own name and then just close, like you say, in the trust.
Absolutely.
Now, for that, we would create a loan from the mother lode to the real estate trust to make the payment, right?
Well, you could do that. You could create a loan. Alternatively, your mother lode trust can just create this new real estate trust and fund it. Let's say you need $1 million for a house. Rather than taking out a $1 million loan and having to make some kind of payment, even if it's an interest-only payment on a balloon note, why don't you have your mother loan trust fund the real estate trust to begin with? Instead of $1 million, make it $1.5 million or $2 million. That way you're going to pay for property taxes and, you know, the landscaping and the maintenance, the new pool you want to put in the house as well. And whatever is left over, you put it into a mutual fund or something like that. Let it continue to earn so the trust does not deplete itself. So there'll always be money there to pay for those incidentals, like property taxes, et cetera.
That's great, but I have both trusts already in place. Can I still do that?
No, for that scenario, you have to create a new trust.
Okay. Then my original real estate trust would not be useful?
Well, wait a minute. Wait. Let me think about that. No, when you exchange, you can designate a certain amount of money for pass-through accounts, and the money that's in the pass-through account can then fund that other trust, and that would still not be a taxable event.
Say again now.
Okay, so when you exchange, you know, I seriously doubt we're going to be able to exchange into more than one trust at our initial exchange.
Okay.
So you're there, you're at your exchange, and you say, okay, Mr. Banker, blah, 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 I would like X number of dollars in a pass-through account so I can fund my other trust, you know, later on this week or whenever I have the opportunity to visit the bank again.
Very good. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. Now, we're back, and I know you've answered this many times, but we're still at the point that even though there's very little to none money in the account, we still need to close it and open a new account, or say maybe two or three new accounts in the mother load to take care of the denier and the dong and the zim. A new account for each?
From what I understand, and I think Judy has heard the same thing that I have, we need to have separate accounts, as you said, for different currencies. Not necessarily different trusts, but separate accounts. So let's say you've got the Dean Trust, and then under the Dean Trust, you're going to have an account for the dinar, account for the dong, account for the zim, whatever. But all under the same trust. I mean, some people want to go and have different currencies into different trusts, and that's certainly possible, but it's not really necessary.
Okay. Then the pass-through account would be very useful. Do you see a problem in creating one at the time of
no,
exchange?
I don't.
Very good. Thanks a lot,
Carol. I think pass-through accounts are done frequently. I don't think it's going to be a big deal at all. I think the issue we're going to face at our exchange is time. And that's why they're not going to let it, in my mind, you know, just to my mind,
right.
I just don't think they're going to allow us that much time to set up individual trusts at that time, other than the main one.
In that light, Carol, are you still thinking we would have one 800 number, or are we talking about different 800 numbers in all locations of the country or all states?
From what I was reading this morning, it sounds more like there's going to be several of them. And what I have been led to understand is they are going to ask you your zip code, and you're going to be assigned a redemption center near there. Now, if you have ZIM, you have to go to a redemption center because it will be HSBC. For anything else, if you don't have any ZIM, it'll probably be Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo will be exchanging ZIM from what I read, but not at the higher rates that HSBC will. When you do make your appointment, you should tell them if you are bringing anybody with you, such as an attorney, such as somebody to push a wheelchair, somebody to read documents to you. If you're going to bring anybody with you, you have to let them know ahead of time.
Okay.
What else did I read about this today? You know, just be prepared. If you have reading glasses, bring your glasses. Bring several blue pens. You know, you want to be aware of everything that's going on. I do not believe they're going to let us record everything, anything. But more than likely, we are going to have to sign an NDA if we have ZIM. Maybe not the other currencies, but ZIM for sure.
Okay, back in that light, I'm in Missouri, and there are no HSBC banks anywhere near.
From what I read this morning, they will probably be setting up redemption centers in different areas. It may not be a bank. It may be a vacant building that they've rented. Okay. In some cases, it may be using another room of a different bank. So maybe HSBC will rent a couple rooms from Wells Fargo.
Very good.
I don't know for a fact, but that's what I've been told and what I've read.
Well, that's sure good info, Carol.
Yeah.
One last question. On the, for instance, the NDA, is it possible, if you don't take an attorney with you, to put a statement in there to the fact that this would be pending on the approval of my attorney or something to that effect?
I don't know.
Okay.
I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt that too, Carol.
Yeah. Because that would be a really easy way for anybody to get out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm sure true. Thanks a lot, Carol. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Dean. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Really good question, Dean. Anybody else have any other questions? Yeah.
Great question.
So, Dean brought up something that I meant to talk about a little bit earlier, like how do I get money out of this trust? So, we've often recommended that you, for a major purchase like a house, that you borrow the money. But, as I said, I think an easier way to do that is to have your mother loan trust create additional trusts to make those major purchases, like the house or the car or the motor home or whatever. But, you know, what about, well, how to get money to live on? Well, you're a trustee. You're actually managing this trust. You deserve a salary. Pay yourself a salary. And don't forget, you know, most of your expenses will be taken care of. I mean, you're not going to have a mortgage payment. You're not going to have a car payment, any of those things. So you have to determine how much money you need to live on every month. If $5,000 is not enough, give yourself a raise. If $10,000 is too much, cut it back. You know, you can make that determination. Again, there's nobody between you and your money. Nobody can tell you how much you can take. But just remember, whatever you do take is taxable income to you. There's other ways the trust can pay for expenses, business expenses, stuff like that. It can pay for somebody else that you're paying to take care of the trust for you. You're probably going to need a bookkeeper. You're going to have wealth managers. You're going to have this one and this one and this one. The trust can pay all those expenses. They're not coming out of your pocket. And, you know, there's trust certificates. As I said earlier, reading about what the trust certificates are, if there is a surplus or you decide as trustee that you do want to take a big chunk out of this, you're going to declare a distribution. So you and your spouse, if you have one, each get half of whatever you decide to make a distribution. So let's say you decide to take $500,000 out of the trust. So each of you is going to get $250,000, however your certificates are allotted. That, of course, again, is still taxable income to you. Loans, like we talked about, loans are not taxable income. Expenses are deductions to the trust, so they're not taxable income. So there's all kinds of ways to get money out. And, you know, the question again comes up, well, if this is not going to be a taxable event, why do I want to take money out of the trust later and they have to pay taxes on it? So my recommendation, and this is just a recommendation on my part, you know, you all know I'm not an attorney, I'm not a CPA, I'm not a tax person at all. So why don't you're sitting there with a little slip of paper at your redemption and it's got a lot of zeros on it. And you say, okay, Mr. Banker, I have all this money now. I would like you to put X amount of dollars, say $100,000, into my personal checking account. Here's my account information. I will need wires for these people. I believe I've heard or read somewhere along the line we're going to be limited to 5 wires and 5 cashier's checks. So have those things made up ahead of time so you know who you're paying what. You're going to ask your banker to do all that. So whatever's, and then say, okay, Mr. Banker, after this, whatever's left after all that, I want to all go into my mother load trust. So you're getting all that money out up front in your own name, but it's still not a taxable event at that point. So it's just another way to have to get some cash out without it being taxable.
Excellent, Carol. Great personal recommendation. I love it.
Well, as I said, this is going to be a real short call today. So, oh, there we go. Hi, Jana. How are you today?
Hi there. You're saying you can take a chunk out of the trust. I was wondering how much time it would take to get the money into your account.
I believe they should be able to do it for you that day, or maybe even the second day. Everything I've been reading said we should have cash. We should be able to walk away with a little bit of cash. And all these, as I said, all these wires and things. They should
when you take a chunk out of your trust.
Oh,
say
whatever.
You get a certificate or something.
Whenever you want to.
And then it would just go through maybe the same day you'd have that access to funds? Oh,
sure.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And then another is, say you want to go purchase a car and you're on a whim and you want to go get a car right then, would you first need to make up a trust to purchase the car, or purchase the car and then put it into a trust?
Well, if that's the case, let's just say you're tooling around one day and you pull into a Lamborghini dealer.
Yeah, exactly.
you're going to, in that case, borrow the money from the trust. If you think about it ahead of time, then you are going to go ahead and, as I said, then you're going to set up a vehicle trust and you're going to fund it initially from the mother loan trust. But if it's just on a spur of the moment, you're just going to have to borrow the money from the trust, that's all.
And then make its own trust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that could be done fairly quickly, you know, because you want it to be protected, I would imagine, right away.
Yeah.
So I guess within a few days you could have that Lamborghini within its own trust.
Well, you know, a lot of that's going to depend on how busy I am. But as I say, I've got some staff now should be able to help me out with all that stuff. So hopefully we're still looking at inside of a week.
Okay. And on that same note, so we have a master trust with you, say, just hypothetically, and then we go down the road 5 or so years and we live somewhere different and have different connections. Are we able to still work within the same trust but maybe a different trust company, like different people that are not within your?
Oh, no. I mean, as far as what I do is create trust, right? You're going to have somebody, if you want to have somebody else manage it, that is your choice. But I create the trust.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe I'm misunderstanding your question.
You have to keep creating trust underneath the master trust. So would we still have to use your employees or?
You know, honestly, I haven't thought 5 or 6 years out. But,
I know.
you know, we'll see.
Y'all aren't around, you know.
Yeah, we'll see. 5 or 6 years, you know, that's a long time.
Yeah, okay, I know. I just always think that way. But, okay, and then another question is, say I want to create a trust for my children or whomever. Would I be the one to create their trust and fund it? Or would I need them to be participatory in creating their trust?
However you want to do it. If you want to fund it, you're going to fund it from your mother loan trust. And what I have suggested to a lot of my clients that have several children, doesn't even mean there can only be one child, name yourself as executive trustee until you feel that he or she is able to manage this trust on their own. And then when you do, say, you know, 6 months, a year down the line, whatever, you say, okay, honey, here's the keys. It's all yours. And resign as executive trustee.
Okay, very good, very good. So I guess first key is just get the master trust set up right away, and then when we go to our exchange, like you said, this is good. I've gotten so much information from this call. It's just great.
Good.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jan.
What do I push? Do I push anything?
No, I'll click you off. Thank you. There she goes. Okay. Anybody else out there? Okay, let me see here. Hey, Lila, okay. L.A., let's see what telephone number. Area code 908.
Hi, Carol. It's Laura.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. I need to know, on another IQD call, the gal recommends to ask the bank for clean and clear certificates. Could you explain what they are?
And I totally agree. And on my written material that we explain that, clean and clear certificates, you only get them at your exchange.
Okay.
And they let anybody else know whether you're dealing with another bank or trying to buy a house for cash or whatever. They know that the money is of clean origin, and it's not drug money, it's not stolen money, it's clean, literally clean and clear.
Okay, and I think it's recommended to ask for like 25?
Yeah, I'd say 25, and you know, they may only offer you a couple for free. If you have to pay for them, pay for them.
Oh, okay. All right.
Carol, are those certificates notarized? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay, because if they're not notarized, they should give you. They should
But they're the they're the function of the bank, so that's I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Laura. Thank you. Okay, we have Lila again. Hi, Lila.
Carol, the question I have is, explain beneficiary to me. I know that when you do the first thing, you get, you know, 100 shares of beneficial trust, whatever. But what if you got a raft of kids you got to take care of too? Are they also beneficiaries?
Yeah, let's back up a second here. This trust technically does not have beneficiaries. It has.
Oh, okay.
We have certificate holders, and they are, as you say, holders of beneficial interest. When you get your trust, there are 100 total trust certificate units, and it's typically divided into two trust certificates. Now, either you know you get all 100 if you're single, if you are married, your spouse gets 50. But let's say down the line, you think, okay, you know, I think I want to take care of my kids, so there's a whole bunch of them. I don't want one person, just one of them, getting all the money and the other ones being left out. So on that successor trustee page, you're going to spell out, upon my death, I wish my certificates to be distributed as follows. So my eldest daughter is going to be my successor trustee, so she's going to get 35 shares. And the other kids are going to get proportionate shares under that. Does that make sense? So whenever there is a distribution, as I mentioned, they all get their pro rata share. But as far as her one being the trustee, of course, she's the one that can take a salary. She's the one that can make all these decisions. She can, at her discretion at that time, form other trusts for other kids. I mean, there's a lot of ways to do that to make sure they're all taken care of, but not to the point that they all have a say in the trust, because you don't want that. I mean, it's pretty rare you're going to be able to get more than two or three people to agree on anything, let alone if you've got a whole bunch of kids.
More than that, these kids are interested in other things besides finances, and pinning them down long enough to even take care of, you know, a little bit of money is going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. I
Taking care of a lot of money is going to be a real problem.
And that's why you want to have that spendthrift clause.
Okay. And can you have a fiduciary trustee?
If you want to.
Is like, okay.
Well, one of the things we recommend, especially for minor children,
mm-hmm.
So let's say, you know, your kid's 12 now and, you know, hopefully you're going to go on living for a long, long time, but God forbid something happens to you and you have your 12-year-old named as successor trustee. Well, that's not going to work. So you name an interim successor trustee.
Okay.
So you ask Uncle Bill to step in and be the trustee of the trust until Sally's old enough. And by old enough, I really don't suggest 18 or 21. As you say, you kids aren't necessarily interested in managing a lot of money. So, you know, maybe 28, 30, however old Uncle Bill thinks is going to work.
Yeah.
So this kid can take over.
My great-grandchildren are in the 12-year-old range now, so I've got a lot of layers to go through.
Sounds like it.
So, anyway, it's really a challenge to know someone well enough to know that they are financially responsible.
That's true. You know, there's an old saying, you don't know anybody until you live with them. There's also the old saying,
you give them money.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And money changes people.
It does indeed.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us have experienced that at one point or another through our lives. Money changes people, or lack thereof. So as trustees, it behooves us to really be very, very careful on who we're picking up for successors or interim successors or fiduciary trustees, that's what you want to call them. You want this money to last for generations.
I do. I
so
truly
we
do.
We want to make sure that that Sally doesn't blow it all.
Yeah, and you know, God forbid if somebody winds up tied into a drug ring, that's not necessarily the good the way to handle a trust.
Yeah. And one of the things too is, you know, it's a bloodline clause. So let's say Sally, you know, she's of age now and she's married, and she wants to name her husband as a trustee. And you say, oh, no, honey, because something might happen to the current Mr. Wonderful.
Right.
If something happens to you and he's a trustee, then our family has lost control of this trust.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to stay within our bloodline. So her kids, Sally's kids, can be successor trustees, but her husband cannot.
Okay. Well, it's going to take some very clever footwork to make all this happen.
We've tried to make the trust itself easy, fairly easy to operate. I mean, it is a legal document, it's a legal entity, but we have done our best to make it workable and give you
I think I have 38 direct bloodline.
Oh, my goodness.
Potential. Like I said, great-grandchildren. But so it's going to be fun. I'll get back with you personally and work on this some more.
Okay. Thanks, Lyle. I look forward to it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Anybody else have any questions today?
I think, if I might make a little point, I think it's important that all of these decisions that are going to be put in our lap don't have to be made the day we exchange. We can catch our breath and breathe and get used to the fact when we look in our bank account we're not destitute, and just get used to that before we make any big decisions.
Yes, I agree. I actually read something this morning, and she says, take 6 months off. You know, you got to take care of immediate needs. Take 6 months off. Go on a vacation. Relax.
Exactly.
Because once we have all this money, folks, our work will really start. I mean, you don't have all this money without having some responsibility.
Exactly.
So, you know, take a little bit of time. Catch your breath, as Judy says. And then start making some plans. And you're going to be hiring people to help you. You're going to be hiring wealth managers and people like that. And certainly accountants.
Right.
And even you may even need just a plain old bookkeeper. You don't want to sit there and write checks every week. You want somebody else to do it for you.
Exactly.
And we will certainly have the money to do it.
You can also, like our last caller, she could give, $1,000, $5,000 as a tax-free gift to any of these of age grandchildren, and then sit back for 6 months and watch what they do with it. Find out how responsible they are.
Good point.
What I learned about, I have a great granddaughter, but she's only two, but what I learned is I can give her a gift of money as long as I put one parent's name alongside of hers on the pay to part of the check.
Oh, so I didn't know that.
That would work for your lady as well, because she said she had 12-year-old great-grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So.
And right now, I believe the limit is still $15,000 before it becomes taxable to you.
Exactly. That's correct, Carol.
But who knows? That may change.
Yeah.
So, well, if we don't have any more questions, I think we're going to call it a day.
Okay.
So, thank you all for your attendance and attention. And Judy, again, thank you for your assistance.
My pleasure, always.
And just very, very glad to have you here. So once again, my name is Carol Werlius. My telephone number is 425-820-8090. I'm available typically between 9 and 5 Pacific time. And my email address is info@indicator.com. And I do hope this has been an informative call for you. I look forward to hearing from you soon. Go RV and have a great week, everybody. This is our week, right? Go RV. Bye-bye.
Go RV. Thank you, Carol. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.